This is The Sleeping Lord, a poem by David Jones. And is his bed wide? Is his bed deep on the folded strata? Is his bed long? Where is his bed, and where has he lain him down? From north of Llanfair Ymwllt, that's Bilth Wells, south to the carboniferous vaultings of Goa, where in the sea-slope chamber they shovelled aside the shards and broken crockery, the domestic litter and the man-squalor of gnawed marrow-bones, and hearth-ash with shovels fashioned from clavicle bones of warm-felled great beasts. They donated the life signs, the crocked viatic meal, the flint-worked ivory, the sacred seashell trinkets. They kept with care the living amulets of gleam-white rodded ivory, and with oxide of iron, ochred life-red, the cerements of the strong limbs of the young noble, the first of the sleepers of Britannia. Aeons and aeons before we were made an island. Is the tump by Honzi, his lifted bolster, does a gritstone outcrop incommode him? Does a deep incline sag beneath him, or does his dented thorax rest where the contorted heights themselves rest, on a lateral pressured anticline? Does his russet-hued mattress, does his rug of shaly grey, ease at all for his royal dorsals, the vaulted underbedding? Agate hard and very chill, do scattered rocks jut to discomfort him? Millenniums on millennia since the cold earth diked up molten, where the sedimented slowly layered strata, so great the slow heaped labour of their condition, the patient creature of water said to each other, there's no resisting here, the word is made fire. Does his strong spine rest on the bald heights? Where then, would you say, does his foothold kneel? In what deep vale does this official ward this lord's Achilles' heel? Does he lap the bruised foot of his lord and watch lest harm should befall the lord's person? Or over and above what is of obligation, does he do what is his to do? With some measure of the dedication of the daughter of Pebin of the Water Meadow, who held in her feet the two feet of the shape-shifting King of Avron, or silently and carefully and with great veneration, as did Myra Modlen, Mary Magdalene, the eternally pierced feet of the Shepherd of Greekland, the heaven-cunning born of a Vorowin Myra, that's born of the Virgin Mary, lapped in hay in the ox's stall, near the grey ass, in the caved stable, in high bedlam that is both a bright and dark. Does he lean low to his high office in the leafy hollow below the bare hill slope, where the sparse hill flowers begin to thicken by the rushing nant, the rushing brook, where the elders grow, and the tall stemmed foxgloves put on the purple to outbrighten the green grossimer fronds of the Sioux spume-born maiden's hair fern, that means. It were wise not to bruise nor fracture by whatever inadventure these delicate bones, for of such other things made over to her. Might his candle-bearer be standing to hold and ward against the rising valley wind, the twisting flaxwick bends one way with the wind-bowed elder boughs and the pliant bending of the wild elm and the resistant limbs of the tough gnarled oak, even lean all to the swaying briar tangle that shelters low in the deeps of the valley's wood the fragile blodwinnegint, the flower of the wind, the wood anemone, that is. And the wind gusts do not slacken but buffet stronger and more chill as the dusk deepens over the high guandir. Whether Nentwith, there's the Gwandir is a moorland, and below in the Glynoedd is a valley, where the Nent is, and Nent is the brooks. So as the dusk deepens over the high moorland, and below in the glen where the brooks run to conflow with the river, the Avon, where too is the running of the deer, whose desire is to these water brooks. Over the whole terrain, the darkling pall falls, and the chill wind rises higher. Is the season sequence out of joint? The leafy boughs should tremor at this age of the solar year. Be that as it may, by whatever freak of nature, or by the widdishing spill of a spell of a wand weaver, that the Ides of Quintilis blow half a gale, and a cold gale at that, so chill is it that it strikes to the bone, more like the wind of the lengthening light of the strengthening cold, round about the Ides of the Menses of Janus, when the wintry sol has turned his back. But whatever may be the cause of this phenomenon, and altogether irrespective of it, and apart from what is required, and note codified in the notia of degrees and precedence, touching the precise duties of the Lord's candle bearer, and as to where and when he must stand in the Lord's hall, it is the most likely thing in the world you will find him nonetheless, finding here on the open mountain. For it is innate habit to be wherever his lord is, unless prevented by violence or by one of his lord's chief officers. For he is listed last on the roster of the named functionaries. And yet is he not the light-bearer? Whose but he the inalienable privilege to hold upright before the bear of the island in his timber-pillared hall the tall, tapering, flax-coated candle of pure wax, the natural produce of the creatures labouring them in the royal hives, but made a true artifact by the best chandlers of the royal house. It flames upwards in perfection of form, like the leaf-shaped warheads that gleam from the long-hafted spears of the Lord's bodyguard. But immeasurably greater is the pulchritude, for the quivering gleam of it is of living light. And light is in itself a good. Therefore this candle-bearer should presume so far as to argue that his candle does constitute one of the three primary signs of the Son of Mary, light upon light by whom all things are made. So that's about half of that poem.